Welcome to the Blunt Force Gamers Podcast. Before we begin, a few things you should know. We are not politically correct, nor shall we endeavor to be. What you will hear in this podcast can quite possibly be described as horrible foul language. We can and will sound sexist, ageist, racist, sizist, ableist, classist, transphobic, jingoist, or any other ism out there. We speak our minds even if those words are rather vulgar. Seriously, if words hurt you from just hearing them, this podcast is not for you. If you're a gamer who doesn't mind a crude, unapologetic tidal wave of rotten gaming humor, then welcome home and enjoy the show.
Chatelet, my dudes, how's it going? This is
currently in the middle of trying to figure out why the portal's not working. That's what it is.
All right, this is Blunt Force Gamers. Sorry about the lull there, guys. E3 kind of took it out of us, and there was some real-life aggro going on. But I, Darth Blasphemous, am going to be taking the reins a little bit, because I am the most fresh out of these three. Joining us today, we have...
Yo!
Darth Narciss himself.
Who won't even announce his own fucking name.
Why would I have a Mexican that can do it for me?
Because I'm Game Goblin, and I can call you out.
He is technically the Lord and Master of all this.
Yeah, but I'm a lazy-ass bastard, and why do it when I can have a Mexican do it? Isn't that why your people took over the,
We're not even 30 seconds in, and we're racist as fuck.
Isn't that why your people took over all of the,
farming jobs?
Yeah, farming jobs and, fucking lawnmowers and shit. I cannot think.
No.
Oh, this is a wonderful time to podcast.
It is.
But today we are going to talk about gaming, back to the old school, back to our first style, where we're talking about...
dice and paper.
Yep. Role-playing. And you know, we can even throw in some online role-playing in this. But we're mainly talking about pet peeves. What is something that just annoys the shit out of you while you game, or game with other people, or game online?
Other players.
Yeah. That's number one for everyone.
Yeah, the other people.
It's what they do. Is what we want to get to today. Real quick, easy one to start. Something we all agree on is special snowflakes. The person who wants to be the most special snowflake, the story has to be about them and them alone all the time. And those who don't want to put down a sword that kills a character who is played by one of our friends.
Fuck y'all. That's not special snowflakey.
I need...
No.
What's your alignment again?
Chaotic good.
Yeah, we definitely need to get him a...
Or no, sorry, chaotic neutral. I think I'm chaotic neutral. I don't have my paper on me. I'm either chaotic good or chaotic neutral.
Yeah, chaotic neutral. My fucking rosy red butt.
Or neutral good. It might be neutral good. I can't remember. I haven't looked at it in a while.
We played yesterday.
Yeah. When was the last time you actually looked at the header part of your fucking character sheet?
All the time.
Why? That has none of the useful information. All the useful information is the numbers on the side.
I get bored. I'm a role player.
I know the way my character is.
Cool.
I don't need to look at the paper to see, okay, he's from Iacro. I don't need to...
So I look at mine, which, yes, this could be an annoyance, that person who always just has to have their sheet in front of them, just always looking at it, never paying attention to anything else. I'm not that bad, in my opinion, but I'm playing two characters at the same time. So I want to look at the character sheet and be like, all right, this person, channel. I'm not so much a method actor, but, I do voices and shit, which these guys find hilarious. But, I mean, definitely finding someone in a game group that it's always about them. If anything goes wrong, it's because someone slighted them. If anything goes right, they were the only one who did anything useful. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I also hate, and I think everybody predominantly despises, except for maybe the game master, the significant other.
Oh, yes.
The one who can get away with anything just because she or he happens to be sleeping with the one running the game.
Yeah, that has ruined so many goddamn games. So many goddamn games I've been in. And I know so many games other people have been in. I mean, that's one of the standard go-to. So who's playing? Oh, it's so-and-so's significant other's in? I don't want it.
Yeah, so-and-so's significant other, their girlfriend, their boyfriend. And
husband, wife.
Side thing.
If it's a gaming... family or gaming couple, that's one thing, because they separate what's going on the table from what's going on off of the table, but usually get the significant other who's playing the game only because their significant other happens to be running it. That's a shit show.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. I've seen, like Darth Narciss was saying, a lot of games have gone tits up, and not in a fun way.
because somebody's significant other has insisted to play in the same group as everybody else. And then when it comes time for battle or whatever, they're able to get out of it or always get the killing blow or get the best kill shots.
The best loots, always.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever the heck, the character, that their character tends to become the de facto leader of the group, whatever they want to do.
Yep.
And when they're done playing the game, it's even it becomes even worse because now they're bored with it, so either the game has to change, or now we lose our DM because their significant other doesn't want to do that anymore.
In a module, I imagine it's not that bad, but if you're doing homebrew, oh, it's got to be hell.
Even in a module, it sucks. Even in a module, because the GM is going to make concessions, so the significant other gets what they want. Because otherwise, they're going to give the excuse that they always give, well, then I get no nookie.
But you can look at it as in a module, someone else can just pick up the book. You can meet at someone else's house.
Yeah, but now you got to get somebody else. You're either going to lose another player, mm-hmm. because now the significant other and the DM are gone. So now you got to replace a DM and a significant other, because the significant other was playing one of the characters.
Yeah.
So now you got to still replace two people, and that usually kills a group. Because usually the game group is... The game group, because that's the people that want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And now if all of a sudden you lose two people, now there's no more game.
Yeah.
Yeah, so unless it's the GM's significant other happens to already be a gamer, and they've met at the game table,
mm-hmm.
chances are the significant other is just there to stare doughy-eyed at the GM while the GM just gives them concessions.
Yeah.
It ruins games. So that's definitely a dick move.
I don't know, but I've also been in a couple of games where the DM, different DMs obviously, well, maybe not obviously, because, yeah, but where they start dating after the game started, and as you see bit by bit, you know, each week or each time you meet at the table, that character just starts getting more and more badass, just finding more and more loot, you know, they're an archer, there happens to be more badass bows showing up than anything else, and then after a while you're like, are you guys dating? Yeah, how'd you know? We weren't going to tell everyone. Oh, well, you know.
Yeah, the +3 bow of elf slang kind of gave it away.
But you can't mention that, because then that brings drama to the table, and now you're the bad guy.
Wait, don't you mean the +3 bow of they let me touch it?
Yeah, the +3 bow of they let me touch it. Yeah, so that's definitely a taboo at the table. I also disagree with the one person who has to make the game about them, like I mentioned before we started today's podcast. I was in a game where we had a player decide to steal something just to prove that the laws in the city were stupid. It was like, well, this book is worth 100 gold pieces, but you're only fining me 50 gold pieces for stealing it? Well, fine, here's your 50 gold pieces, and I'm keeping the book. And then him and the GM got round and round and round and going back and forth. The GM trying to stay in NPC mode while the player was just railroading it, and we had a handful of other players just sitting there at the table going, why are we here? Because you got that one guy who makes it all about him. He has to do something to railroad the game, and then just him against the GM. Nobody else matters.
And really, at that point, like me as an up-and-coming GM, my automatic throw-to would be flaming balls of, you know, undead hordes or some shit just fall on that character.
Oh, I am known for flaming cows falling from the sky and instantly killing people for stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
That was me early GM days. Just like, fine, you want to be that way? You're dead.
But personally mine, and I mentioned this, it is people touching my goddamn dice.
Touching other players' stuff is definitely a big one.
But it's like...
Well, it's because we're superstitious.
Yes, mm-hmm. Everyone has, you know, a lot of people will set up their dice a certain way. You know, they got to have the 20 showing, or they have to have another number showing, their lucky number, what have you. And if other people bump the table, and sometimes you'll have people that really flip out and they start having a fucking nerd rage in the middle of a fucking game. That also pisses me off. But just people just touching your dice just because, oh, I got to roll a die? Okay, I can't find mine. I'm going to use it. No, don't use my fucking dice.
What I love about your little idiosyncrasies with that, what was it, with your metal ones, you... Hit them with your lighter.
Yes. My plastic ones I put in my mouth.
Yeah.
Yes.
That someone else just touched.
No. I rub it off, and then I put it in my mouth.
Yeah. He rubs it off. Giggity. Giggity, giggity.
You'll get the goo later.
It's right.
Oh, that's why they go in your mouth, right?
Well, I think as far as taboos go also, is keep your fucking dice in the area you plan on rolling them.
And I mean, not to roll them off the goddamn table.
Yeah, I understand, you know, when it's like a hot roll and everybody's like staring at you and you just like toss the die Vega style across the table hoping for something badass, but when it's just a casual roll and your die goes off of the fucking book like six times in a row, it's just like, dude, scale it back a little bit. Rolling dice is not like a contact sport here.
I definitely like the idea of dice trays. I've made one of my own. I've converted a couple different boxes into them. Hell, Kazurkan, you gave him just a cigar box, and he carries that thing around like no tomorrow now.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
And then he still misses it sometimes.
And then he still sometimes misses it. Yeah. He's got a cigar box, and I see it, it bounce right out.
Or he'll, like, go to throw into it, and it just completely goes off, yeah, way off, 45 degrees away.
But yeah, I mean, that's definitely something interesting is the accoutrements people like to have. Some people like rolling trays, dice vaults, dice bags. Some people like to keep it in the original box. They have to keep all the paper, all the things, oh, yeah, the fucking price sticker. All that has to stay the same because, ooh, bad juju.
Mm-hmm. We're superstitious about that.
Like me, I've got basically a trapper keeper with a pencil bag, and that's where most of my dice live. But because now we've changed gaming locations and I can just leave my stuff here, I just have them in a pair of rolling trays.
Well,
to hold one to roll.
Yeah, but a lot of us are indeed superstitious because most game groups have what's colloquially known as the whore dice. Just the random dice that...
The loners.
Yeah, the loners. And nobody likes using those. They hate leaving theirs behind because the loners suck ass. They always roll bad.
Yeah.
That's not true, but it fucking feels like it. And because we're all superstitious as shit, we all believe it.
Well, it's like, Goblin, you have your player killer.
I had.
Had.
They're had missing. My player killers, and I missed those dice.
I bet you they're in Narcissus' couch.
I'm thinking somebody stole them just so I'd stop killing players with them so much.
Dude, your screen is dead. It keeps splashing green. The lower one.
Mm. Well, at least his computer's still alive, unlike mine.
Well, don't mess with any settings too much. You might unplug the mic.
Well, speaking of that, that's another taboo at the game table is electronics.
Yeah, people going on their Twitters, their... Face Spaces, they're my books.
My books.
My books and Face Space. Come yeah. on now.
Fake Space. Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, as a GM, there's nothing more insulting than having one, two, three, or the entire group of players pull out their digital devices and start fucking around. Or even if they're on their laptops and they're like, oh, I got my character sheet right here, but you know they're gaming because they're yeah. a little bit too involved in whatever they're doing. So as a GM, you ask yourself, why am I even bothering to run a game if they're more entertained by playing around with digital devices?
I mean, I can understand it if they're, you know, waiting for, it's like not their, like if you're playing something like Vampire or whatever, and they're planning their next move, and you know, they got their rule book open on their device or whatever.
Yeah.
Or if they're playing in D&D and they're playing a caster, and they're like, oh, what exactly does this spell fucking do? And they're looking that up because that's what they're going to be doing next. But that's different from, here I am just fucking... not paying attention at all, and oh no, it's my turn, and I'm not fucking paying attention because I'm on Facebook.
Yeah.
Or that's watching YouTube.
That's a much different thing than somebody, you know, actually involved with the game, but trying to do something so that when it's their turn, you're not dealing with the wizard spellbook issue.
Yeah.
Where it's, okay, it's your turn, what are you going to do? I'm going to cast, and then they spend 10 fucking minutes looking up their goddamn spell, and you guys are in the middle of a boss fight, tensions are high, and...
And it's towards the end of the night when everyone has to go home.
And that's frustrating because it's pulling you out of the game and it's something they could have done either beforehand or just have the fucking book there and be doing that instead of whatever the fuck Facebook or whatever the hell thing they were doing instead.
Well, it also brings a question, you know, when somebody's got their fucking electronic device out and they're busy checking it or whatever, and even though the GM is going, well, why am I even bothering to run a game? They're also looking at it from another standpoint. Somebody's got their digital device out, they're fucking around with it, and then the player goes, well, I want to be more involved in the game. And it's like, if you were not on that device and you were actually listening to what was going on, you could have possibly interjected yourself in the situation. But instead, you chose to play a game and then ask me to make concessions for you later. It's annoying as fuck.
Seize the dice, baby. You want to do it? Roll or role play?
Yeah. If you want to be involved in the game, put the fucking pocket leash down and get involved.
How was it? Because I believe both of you are old enough to have gamed back in the days before devices, like even as simple as a Game Boy and such. What was it like?
Oh, the old days when we were still gaming in black and white.
Yes, back in the day.
Back in the day.
You old fucks.
I mean, I don't know about him, but for me it was... A lot more... So that's the problem. I don't know if it was because we were kids, and kids tend to be more either all into something or just completely scatterbrained, but when you, everyone was at the fucking table, you know, physically, we were all there, we were playing. And then, you know, we were like, we were the character. But once again, I don't know if that was because we were kids or it's because I was a kid when I, during that time. Yeah. Like, if we had the cell phones and the tech that we have nowadays, would it be that way? But there would also be those kids, like that one kid, usually me, when it was my turn, I'm reading a fucking book. Because I, fuck y'all. I multitask. No, not really. But no, I mean, I'd be reading a book or I'd be reading the rule book or trying to understand shit. But that was my experience. Everyone was tended to be more into the game.
Yeah, everybody was more involved back then. I would go to the local hobby shop, and hopefully nobody with me would die of dysentery, and we would ford the rivers correctly. I only had to replace the tongue on my wagon a couple of times.
It's important. You got to make sure it's the right caulking.
Yeah, yeah, it had to be the right caulking. And occasionally, like on the halfway point between my house to the game shop, I'd have to go out and hunt some deer. That was life in monochrome back then when we were playing. So the weird part is before the digital incursion, one of the most successful games I ran had 14 people at my game table.
Really? And you were running it?
And I was running it. This is a lot of people. This is early on when I started GMing, so the games were a little weird.
Loosey-goosey?
No, they were weird.
Like a lot of probably succubuses and shit.
No. They had to fight Smurfs, like Extortion Smurf, who ran up to them and demanded money or he would explode.
God damn it. So it sounds like you were on the verge of MX.
No, well, we were doing Famori at that point.
So, real quick, sorry to interrupt. MX falls underneath the campaign, the banner of Crack Monkey Games. We just throw everything at it.
Yeah.
So that tends, if anyone's playing a game that's just everything in it, it's known as a Crack Monkey game.
The group consisted of a bunch of people playing vampires, a bunch of people playing werewolves, a bunch playing mages. I think a couple of wraiths were in there. This was the old school second edition vampire stuff, World of Darkness. And each grouping kind of designated their own team leader.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of doing, you know, it's your turn, it's your turn, it's your turn, I broke it down to it's time for the vampires to do their shit because they got celerity, followed up by the werewolves and their rage, followed up by the mages. So each grouping got their own deal. And there was like a spokesman for each group. And this kind of just happened organically. I didn't declare it to happen, but it worked out really well in that group having such a large number. The thing, though, that I take from it from then to even a small group now is my 14 players, all of them were engaged.
Yeah.
When I was running a combat scene or a storytelling scene or anything, except for maybe like one or two people who were off to the side discussing rules stuff or real life things, all eyes were on me. Everybody was engaged. In D&D games where we had the smaller groups back then, 4 or 5 players, everybody was engaged.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to game time, we had it set out, you know, every 90 minutes to 2 hours, smoke break time. Go out into the back of the shop, smoke your cigarettes, take 15 minutes, we'll all reconvene and get right back in the game. And once you sat down and pulled your character sheet back out, you're like, I got my cigarette, I got my drink, we're good to go. And everybody was engaged again. But the digital incursion, especially in like the last decade, you've got like one person off fucking around on their fake book. You've got another person who's texting someone. And I don't mind the whole texting the GM thing because that's just an evolution.
Blue book note.
It's note taking or note passing.
Yeah, blue book theme.
Yeah. It's an evolution of the old note passing stuff. But if somebody's over there and they're having a conversation with their second cousin's brother's nephew's niece's former roommate, while I'm trying to run a game, then I get a little offended.
Well, that's what I find hilarious, because speaking of being engaged, let's talk about being disengaged. Breaks. Now, we're a bunch of smokers. I haven't always been, but at the old recording studio, we could smoke inside. So there was something.
Yeah.
And when we had to adjourn to Kazarkan's place, we smoked outside. Little breaks.
True that.
At Narcissus, we would go out as necessary. And now that we're here, we can technically smoke inside, open the windows, turn on the fan. But we have a mixed group of smokers and non-smokers. Now, I've changed it so that they are literally getting fresh air as much as possible. They're by the window. The fan is bringing air in past them, and then it hits us.
They're making concessions not to bitch about us puffing up constantly indoors, so I'm willing to definitely show respect back and make concessions by going, here, I'm going to load the living room up with fans and open windows and air fresheners and all sorts of things to, you know, make your guys' time more comfortable since you're not ragging on my ass.
Exactly. But what is your guys' opinion on, because, like, I'm still a new guy.
Fucking new.
Breaking. And, you know, taking breaks.
Breaks.
You need breaks even for, even if you're not, even if you're smokers and you're able to smoke inside or what have you, you still need breaks where you disengage from the game, you get up, you stretch, because you don't want your fucking ass bones to feel like they're fucking going through your butt cheek and merging with your seat. That sucks ass when you're just sitting there, because some of our sessions, some of our game sessions, when we're like fully into it, go from like 5 o'clock to 10 o'clock, 5 hours, not getting up, not moving. That sucks ass.
Or like when we played Vampire, when we would meet, we would convene at like 5 o'clock and leave at 5 o'clock.
Yeah. That can get tiresome. You need to stand, you need to fucking stretch.
A good rule of thumb is every 90 minutes to 2 hours or so. Mm-hmm. Or if the GM is running a game, because different GMs, of course, have different styles.
Yeah.
And the game, when it gets to a point where there's kind of like a lull in it, you just come out of a heavy combat scene, that's a good time to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right as the combat scene is coming down and everybody is about to leave the dungeon, or they're done talking to the prince, or they've just blown up Splin for the 18th time,
mm-hmm.
that's a good time to get up, stretch, because it's a lull between a transition point. There's the word I was looking for, a transition point.
Yeah.
Transition points are really good areas for that to happen. So even if it's only been like 30 minutes or an hour, if it's a transition point, you know, you got that one gamer who's sitting over, their legs are crossed and they need to pee, take a break.
See, the way I've been doing it on mine, and both of you are present for this, is if you got to get up and use a restroom, just do it. If it's your turn or not. We haven't really had to do much of the breaking stuff, but that's because it's a really loosey-goosey bullshit game. It was meant to fill time because we've been missing regular game, the ultimate sin.
Not my fault.
Mm-hmm. True. Damn people and their weak immune systems.
Damn people and their real life aggro.
Right?
Right.
Reasons like this, I need to win the lottery.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. he's got something. Oh. Captain Opinion's going to say something.
Oh, God.
We're waiting for it.
And we're recording.
And I had something, and then y'all killed it. You killed a newborn thought. You horrible bastards. You made it stillborn.
And that's another taboo that can happen at the game table.
Mm.
When a player is about to say something, and another player goes, ooh, I do this. And then they just completely fucking interject. Like, I've seen it happen, like, I think it was the Paladin in one of our game groups. Mm. Him and the Cleric were like, different gods, of course, that they didn't get along. But the cleric was a newer player, and they finally like got an idea, and they're like, oh, I'm going to do... And right as they're halfway through the sentence, the paladin's like, I rush forward and smite it! Thanks, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Players who have to jump in when somebody else has got the talk stick and then railroad them. It's annoying. So don't be that dick player, peoples.
One of my old DMs had a rule, basically... If it was somebody else's turn and you jumped in, your first time's free, whatever, everyone gets excited, whatever. Yeah. If it happens again, a fairy would appear out of nowhere and bop you over the head with the shut the fuck up stick. And he actually had a foam stick that he would hit you with, and your character would get some random ailment. In-game, your character now has fucking mummy rot.
But it's actually really good.
He would hit you, and then your character gets fucked as well. And people learn to shut the fuck up and let other people take their goddamn turns. I mean, it gets mean, especially if he throws out... I mean, he would roll on a fucking thing what your character got.
Yeah.
But it's the dice seem to love giving people a fucking mummy rot.
Damn.
That's brutal.
Yeah, that's awesome. I kind of like it. It's just that this chair didn't eat me while I'm trying to run game. I might do that to you guys.
No! I'm now upset that I mentioned this. You heard nothing! Erase the recording!
You know how hard it is for me to get out of that chair? Jeez.
So, to explain to our people who can't see us, because, God, we don't want to show you this place right now.
No, we don't.
Here at the new recording location...
Don't let others know how I live!
I have a chair. It's a rather nice chair.
I love that
chair. That was gifted to me from Narcissus when I used to live with him.
I loved that chair.
And there's a problem I'm having with one of the legs being busted. I tried swapping it around, still had the problem. So I just took a pair of the legs off. the back pair. So now the chair is leaning back at an angle.
About almost 45 degrees.
And we swear this chair has been cursed by him, because even when it sat upright, I would fall asleep in the chair all the time. I could be perfectly, just woke up, feel great, just, you know, did stuff, get back, I'm falling asleep.
It is the chair of napping.
And that is why I have opted for my new computer chair. And I've left that for Goblin.
And I try to run game from it in a half groggy phase.
Like, you can't sit upright or just slightly leaning back. You're all the way back at a 45 degree angle. It's like you're in a recliner with your feet up and you're just like, oh, this is...
Or it's really fun when we put Fatimus in there, because he will drop a die and be like, oh, no, no, this ain't happening.
No, this ain't happening.
But we were talking about something.
How about taboos the GM does? Because players make a lot of taboos amongst each other, but there's always GMs who go a little bit too far or do stupid shit. And of course, we can start right back at segue, right back to where we began with the significant other. Aha! Uh-huh. Because the GM catering to somebody else because, well, they let me touch it points. Stupid.
Okay, my personal one is if you're playing a game that's a structured game and you change all the rules and then nobody knows what the fuck the rules are. It's hard to play a game. Like, if you're playing a Crack Monkey game, everyone knows it's basically standard, you know, D20, 20 is good, 1s are bad. Got it. You know, I can do basically anything. Cool. Let me try. But if you're playing something like D&D, but you have your own personal rules Bible that you're going off of, that's a conglomeration of first, second, third, some couple things from fifth, and then your own homebrew shit, and that's all in your head, how the fuck are we supposed to make a character? How the fuck are we supposed to do a game with, okay, so the fireball does this. Well, no, see, because in my game, fireball does this. Well, how the fuck was I supposed to know that before I shot up a fucking fireball? You hand me these character books to make my character with. I'm going off of this, the only information I fucking have, and all of a sudden you're saying it doesn't do that in your game.
Yeah, GM's changing the rules like that is a bullshit maneuver.
Like, if you have a bunch of rules that you change, let people know in the beginning. Like, okay, I don't like the way that I feel that lightning should affect metal. Like, if you have a lightning blast, it should affect metal things more, or you should be drawn to, you know, yada yada. That makes sense. Let us know beforehand.
That's why I always make house rules more of a democratic forum.
Yeah.
We have one.
Like we have one. Good example is when we're rolling two hit, ties go to defender. That's not the way it's written in the book, but it's easier for everybody to remember, so that's what we roll with. And I bring that up. Session one, do we want to stick with it? And the group is like, we're fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes a house rule.
Yeah.
It's not me arbitrarily going, well, now ties go to the aggressor. He, because that's the way it works in my game. Villains always have the upper hand. No.
Or splitting things like with that comment you just made. Ties go to the villain, but the hero, it works the opposite way. Like, when you're trying to hit them, oh, nope, I'm the bad guy, so it didn't hit. It matched, so it didn't hit. I defended it. What?
Yeah.
That sort of thing. Or having multiple rules for multiple different, like, every single player has a different rule for them. So that ties in back to the
Favoritism
with your significant other or whatever. Or even if it's not your significant other, if it's somebody that you've been gaming with for a long time, or just one of your best, that's your best friend in the group, these other people are just fuckers.
Or a relative.
Yeah. Oh, that's the way he's always played those kind of characters. Yeah, we just let that rule fly.
Yeah, that's... No.
No.
No. That's bullshit, and it pulls us out of the game. It makes games more not fun for everyone. Because everyone at the table is playing. Even the DM is... They're playing because that's their world that they've created, or their module that they're running. And it's the DM's job to make sure that everyone's having fun. It's the players' jobs themselves to make sure that every other player is having fun and the DM's having fun. Because if the DM's not having fun, guess what? You're not going to have a fucking DM.
Flaming cows from the sky.
Or the DM's just going to stop.
It's true. If the GM is not having any fun, then the game is not going to be any fun.
And that's the number one rule about any gaming. If you're not having fun, why the fuck are you doing it? Once a game starts feeling like work... That's when more like real life stuff starts coming up. Because a lot of people are like, I've been putting, you know, I'm supposed to be doing this, but I'm having fun at the game, so I'm going to put that shit off.
So that's why you guys have been ditching my game constantly.
Dude, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm here all the damn time.
I know.
I live here now. Oh yeah, that corner, that's mine now. Fuck off. I'm pointing at a random corner.
Pay me rent, bitch.
Yeah, you gotta pay him rent.
No, I'm like a cockroach. I was here first.
Brass or ass, motherfucker.
I'm like a cockroach. I was here first.
No one sleeps in my computer corner for free.
But it's so warm.
But as soon as it feels like work, all those things that you've been putting off for in favor of the game now start taking more precedence because it's I could do the game, but I should probably take care of this shit. You know,
or even when you blow it off for frivolous things.
Yeah,
true.
Like, oh, it was an okay day, and I just kind of walked to the gas station and back and started playing my video game. I can start or stop anytime.
Yeah.
Another GM taboo that I've seen at game tables, and thankfully it happens infrequently, but I have seen it, and it rarely ever happens at con, thankfully, but I have in private games seen Captain No. Well, I want to cross the bridge. No, you can't. It's too rickety. Your dexterity is not high enough. Well, then I cast a spell to fly across the bridge. Well, I'm sorry, there's an antipode zone here. It doesn't allow that kind of magic. You try even the most simple of tasks. I want to talk to the barkeep, and the GM is like, no, it's too noisy. Or no, no, no. And that's all you hear from the GM, no matter how you're trying to resolve a situation in game. The GM just railroads you with the word no.
Yeah, it's an aspect of the railroading. Because the GM's had it set up so that the characters are going to go this way, and if you're trying to go that way, they don't have anything prepared, they just say no to it. But that's that's one of the things that sucks about DMing. No matter how much work you've put into it, you're going to come across situations where you have nothing prepared. And if you're not able to improvise something, either you're going to have to call an impromptu break so you can figure something out, or you're just going to say no to it, and now you've disconnected with the players.
I've also seen it done where the GM is more of a control freak. And I'm guilty of this as well, especially a few years ago, because every GM has a go-to that they draw inspiration from, and for me, a lot of it's video games. So, and video games are very linear in problem-solving. So, to solve a problem, you know, you have to toggle switch A, then toggle switch C, then toggle switch B. Well, that's not always the way players are going to think, so I've tried to keep this in mind, not to railroad a linear path to solving a problem, such as with the bridge. You know, if a player goes, well, if I can't cross the bridge by walking across it or flying, I'm just going to swim across the river. And even if I go, well, that's not the way to cross the bridge, you're supposed to ring the bell three times, summon the ghost, and have him escort you, but you know what? Fuck it. You swim across the river, make a couple of swim checks. Players, yes, they're going to think of things that are outside the box, and at the same token, having one solution to every problem is not the way a GM should be running.
No campaign survives first encounter with the players.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
Well, think about us. You were telling me in the car, we're not even at the halfway mark yet.
You're getting close. You're getting close to the halfway mark.
And you're homebrew, and we've been playing it for, what, a year now?
I have also had this campaign kicking around in my head for the greater part of about 7 years.
True, but we're, what, the fifth iteration?
Third.
Third.
Third iteration.
And then there's another thing. It's not even so much a bad thing so much as an odd thing. And I've noticed a lot of groups do this. They fall in love with an NPC. Some random, just cookie-cutter, you know, NPC that's not even supposed to be a big deal. All of a sudden, all the characters are just like, I love this guy. Let's make him, like we did with the 50s housewife in the vampire.
Yeah. Shit, Betty.
Yeah. The NPC originally had no name. It was just a person mentioned, but everyone was like, dude, this character seems awesome. Let's talk to Betty.
It was a complete window dressing NPC, and you guys just latched onto her, and I'm just like, shit.
Let me come up with a name and a bit of a backstory.
Okay. No, you guys named her.
Oh, that's right, that's right.
Right, it was her and Swamp Ass we came up with.
You guys came up with Betty's name and Swamp Ass's name. And as a GM, this is not a taboo, but more of a suggestion for GMs to let players have some ownership of the world they're inhabiting. It's not just your world anymore. And when the players latched onto this random fucking NPC, and they're like, this chick is cool, I'm just like, come up with a name for her, and we'll roll with that. And they all decided to call her Betty.
Yeah, 50s Housewife, has to be Betty.
50s Housewife,
had to be just Betty. Like something fun, my follower right now, Peck Peck, who was supposed to be just a, this is the encounter, your character's frozen, you're kind of out of game for this session, just do this, roll some dice, be involved. And it turned into someone that I like, what was it? Our former game member really wanted to be in the group. You guys have had fun interactions with. Fucking Peck just came out of left field, went from a few base numbers and a description to, wow, this is a fleshed out character.
I don't know if we went over this in podcasting before, but I'll go ahead and explain it now, just in case for anybody jumping into the podcast stuff. Our resident occultist got hit with a sepia snake sigil and was taken out of game for a short duration. So the next game session, I decided, hey, the player can play this super special guest NPC villain. And so Peck is a goblin in mechanized full plate armor, shows up to kick the shit out of the players, and I hand the player, whose character is currently
out of it
and frozen, I hand him a sheet. I'm like, hey, here's the basic stats and numbers. You're the special guest villain this week. Try to kill the players. And he gave the NPC a background and a hoo-wee.
Hey, Lord, I tell you, man. My name is Peck, Reginald the Third.
It's
Reginald the Third now. Okay.
Okay, he's at it.
Keep going.
And this fine piece of machinery before you is, well, it's the fifth, really, of my very fine line of mechanized armor suits. Now, this doesn't run on very, very much magic at all. I had some magic, but someone had to snap my wand. She's furry. And, yes, this is the third iteration. The first one was called the General Ree, named after my grandpappy.
Yeah, so he took an NPC, and when he took the leadership skill, he actually took the special guest villain as his cohort. And so a random possible-to-kill NPC who was just there to be a one-shot became a constant part of the party. So, advice to GMs, let the players have some ownership of the world, because it's not just your world once the player characters jump into it. Of course, the opposite hand of GMs doing bad stuff is Captain Yes.
Whatever they want to do, they can do, and there's no consequences for anything.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Oh, the rogue wants to steal this? A special item from the castle? Yeah, sure. And the guards aren't there. Nobody knows anything. Oh, all the alarms are disabled. Yeah, everything's perfectly fine. You can do whatever you want. Then where's the players
just walk through and they start a tavern brawl that turns into a massacre, but hey, the local duke doesn't care.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. There has to be consequences for actions. There has to be conflict. Otherwise, it's not fun.
Yeah.
At that point, you might as well just be going like, man, I'm going to nuke half the planet. Okay.
You're okay. Nothing to work forward.
Yeah. At that point, it's nothing but a looter shooter. Get as much loot as you can roll the dice. There's no fun in that.
True.
The fun is the challenge. Without adversity or challenge, there is no story.
Never be afraid, as a DM, never be afraid to kill players for being fucking stupid, or if that's the way the dice rolled.
You could ask Thoric about that one. His current gnome that he's playing, also in this game, was in the second iteration of this game. I killed him straight out with my PK dice. I miss those dice. He comes walking down the hallway, he's very first in line, and my rule that I had with that game group, I still have with this one, is let the dice fall where they may. And I drop the dice behind the screen, and immediately I just look at him and I'm like, I'm sorry, dude. I am so sorry. First round of combat, the creature gets to jump on him and crits. Flat out. And it's meant for an entire group to be dealing with, not just one gnome. He got munched and squelched right then and there. Mm-hmm. But at the same token, like Darth Narsis was just saying, let the dice where they fall, and if player stupidity gets involved, unlike what happened to Thoric, which was a total I'm sorry moment, this was a total moment where I'm like, you fuckers walked into this. Deal with it. The obelisk, which you guys have just encountered in my game session, was actually a site where one player character actually died, and another one got fucking hammered. There was 13 pillars around the obelisk. And the players walk in, two of them decide to investigate the obelisk, while two of them stand outside the circle of pillars.
Dumbasses, splitting the party.
They were within eyeshot. It was 150 feet. 150 feet. That's not very far. Thing is, the anti-paladin and the monk are the ones investigating the obelisk in the center. The bard and the cleric, the two with healing spells, are on the outside perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
When the obelisk fires up, a control barrier pops up around the outside edge so that the healers cannot get into the combat zone.
Oh.
And then a Baylor shows up, cracks his way out of the fucking obelisk, and he just starts hammering the fuck out of it. Dude, the reason the monk survives is because he kept running. He's like, I can outrun you, Baylor, motherfucker. The anti-paladin? No, it was a puny god moment. Once the Baylor got its hands on the anti-paladin, it was fucking over. And I'm like, you split the party, you had the healers on the other side banging on a fucking invisible wall like, we can help you, but they can't cross the barrier to cast heal spells. So, yeah, as a GM, I had to actually let the dice fall where they may and kill one of the player characters because they split the group. It was... they're dumb. Now, if the bard had only just walked up to it and made a bardic knowledge check instead, things may have turned out a little different.
Bardic bullshit. Oh, yes.
Yeah, made this bardic bullshit roll.
Mm.
Bring it up. Do it.
Nope. I was going to say something, but I'm not saying it.
Say it.
Mm.
Say it.
Certain people might hear this.
Oh, certain people may not hear it. Have you seen... you haven't seen our metrics, dude. We only have a handful of listeners. Like, we get like 10 downloads an episode.
By the way, thanks, guys. We really enjoy it.
You guys are awesome.
You're the reason why we keep doing this.
Well, I thought we were doing this because we find it fun, and if anyone listens to it, hey, that's awesome.
No, we started it because we thought it'd be fun, and then we keep doing it because we actually have people who apparently like this because we haven't gotten hate mail. Feel free to email us, by the way.
What? The hate mail or normal mail?
Both.
Both?
Oh, Jesus.
¿Por qué no los dos?
Blasphemous loves him some dick pics.
I'm going to kill you, I swear.
Good thing this is an audio show, so I can't show people, you know, your response to dick pics being sent.
We start doing reaction videos, him opening all of his dick pic mails.
You know, we are starting a YouTube channel, and we're going to get in communication with Magog.
We are?
I'm trying.
We're going to try.
Try.
I've sent two messages so far. No,
has he responded? Well, then if he hasn't responded, then you're not... You're doing like a teaser thing, and the dude hasn't even responded yet.
I said trying to get in contact. Not we're working with him. God, that'd be awesome.
We're trying to contact Magog. That's where we stand at the moment. We'd like to
work with Magog. But we're noobs and losers and shit.
He only started his channel like 6 months ago.
Yeah, he only started like back in February.
And then like he got two shoutouts and then...
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, bardic bullshit.
Bardic bullshit.
It's awesome.
So don't let players or GMs let players die horrible ways.
Hey, if that's the way it's going to happen, if people are stupid and they're going to touch the MacGuffin of instant person kill, they're going to touch the fucking MacGuffin of instant person kill. That's on them.
Actually, player characters, what they remind me of is that scene. Oh my god, and this might be a really old reference for you two. From Time Bandits.
Oh, I love that movie.
The very end of the movie, I actually think the player characters are the parents.
Yeah.
Because the little kid is like, don't touch it, it's evil! And what do? They touch it. It's like player characters do this. Like, the GM is sitting there like, don't touch that flaming ball of death over there. And players are like, let's go after the flaming ball of death.
Let's touch it.
Or my
let's
favorite.
Put on the mask.
Let's put on the mask.
I'm going to shoot at that mirror in the distance.
Oh, Jesus.
No, remember, that was the excuse they made that it was, I thought it was a mirror.
Yeah.
They knew it wasn't a mirror.
No, it was a plague mirror.
Yeah, this group has a lot of hate for Will-O-Wisps. Deservedly so.
Yeah, they're fucked up. That we were level two.
That module was not balanced at all.
I told you that module was in them. And the strange part is, also...
I've looked up some reviews on it, and yeah, there's people going like, yeah, this module has some weird-ass encounter, some things that level ones can roll over, and then some things that the next combat is like four fucking trolls jumping you out of nowhere at level one.
The trolls killed us.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, part of the reason the trolls killed you is because your damage dealer was busy putting their clothes on for 10 rounds. Okay. All right, anyway, we're derailing. We're derailing. So back to taboos. We've got player taboos, GM taboos. What other taboos happen at the table that immediately incite rage between you guys? Because I know it incites rage for me. Hmm? Yeah, I'm going to have to edit that out later.
Now I have to leave it in because it's funny.
Let's see. I would have to say I just fucking had it and then the moose killed it.
Yeah, the moose always killed it.
The moose, Evan.
There's another one right there. The Joker at the table.
Really?
Well, okay, having somebody tell crack in the occasional joke at the table is awesome. That's not taboo at all. That's pretty cool. Somebody who adds a little bit of, you know, comedy to a situation. Even if it's a tense situation, you're standing there, the prince of the city is looming over your player characters because you've done fucked up. You are so close to being blood hunted that you're practically pissing blood in your pants. The gangrel sheriff is just looking at you, sharpening his claws, ready. And then you got this one guy over there who's like, I wonder if this guy knows how to dance to Madison. He's kind of old.
You're talking about more of a class clown than the person just cracking jokes on
occasion. Yeah, the class clown who just cracks a joke occasionally. You know, he goes, you know, I wonder how much the prince paid for those wingtips to go to Zoot Suit. Just the left field guy who just adds a spark of humor to it to help relieve a little bit of tension or whatever. But when you got the guy who's just...
Constantly.
That's what I'm talking about, the class clown, the guy that has to be the center of attention.
Yeah, the class clown.
That's the no-no, because they're taking... They're either making the situation, if it's in character, it's making it worse, or if it's out of character, it's just pulling everyone out of the fucking game.
Yeah.
Because here they are trying to deal with that intense situation you're just talking about. Everyone's like feeling their character's emotions, trying to actually role play here, and the person goes, hey guys, time out 1 second. Wouldn't it be funny if... Man, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, yeah. Time out. No.
I've seen... So one of my other game groups has a way of dealing sort of with that, and it doesn't really work, is when you're at... Once you're at the table, dice in hand, paper in hand, what have you, everything you say is in character. So there is no, hey, holding up your fingers, holding up your thumb, whatever, to signal out of character. It's just everything is in character, and it doesn't work. You gotta have...
Usually when a GM does that, and I'm sorry to the train wreck you here. Usually when a GM does that, they're trying to maintain control over their game because everybody, if they're not being held accountable for what they're saying in character at the table constantly, will just go all over the fucking place. And the GM and the game session itself will have no control over it whatsoever.
But I one of the things that I don't think it works, period, is because we're fucking nerds. Everything to us is a reference to something else. There is no such thing as a D&D group that doesn't go off on rants on fucking Monty Python. I have never been in a group.
Game without it.
I have never been in a group where somebody doesn't make a Monty Python reference and then it goes off. It happens. You can't get everyone stuck because they're not. Once again, it goes back to that whole having fun thing. That's one of the reasons why we game with the people we game with, because we're having fun. Where usually it's a group of friends that are hanging out and playing a game to pass time and to have fun and hang out. And if all of a sudden now there's rules and regulations and this is the way it is, man, fuck you. I'm not having fun anymore. Eat a dick.
Yeah, I'm not having fuck you.
And it's one of those things where, in theory, I understand why and I see why they're doing it, because, hey guys, you know, this encounter is supposed to be only, you know, 30 minutes, but now we've been trying to deal with this for the last 5 hours because y'all won't fucking buckle down and just hash this out in character real fast.
Sounds like my games.
So now I'm gotta, you know, crack the fucking whip over you. It starts feeling like being railroaded, but at the same time, it takes us out because it's no longer fun. You have to be able to...
You have to be able to relax a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is true, I mean...
If everything you say at the table is being held against you, it does take the fun out.
You can't be super fucking serious about everything.
No.
It just doesn't work.
Nope. Doesn't work.
You were saying there's one that you were thinking of.
Oh, yeah. And it's actually one of those that I could probably rant about, and I'll try not to, is crazy people.
Do it.
Rant. Crazy people or crazy characters?
Okay, crazy characters.
Okay.
Okay, and I understand the opening point of why people want to play somebody who's a nut job. Because it's liberating. They're no longer truly responsible for their own actions. And they see insanity as kind of a form of liberation. Where it's not. Insanity is fucking horrifying.
Yep.
Insanity is... But
you can't trust your own
pardon
mind.
Pardon the pun, it's insane.
Yeah, you can't trust your own mind.
You can't trust your own mind. You can't trust your own eyes. You can't trust your own friends. And one of the most horrible feelings you can have in real life is feeling yourself slipping.
Mm-hmm.
Or having to deal with the ramifications of losing your shit, and then 5 minutes later going, what the fuck was I just doing? And people, when they play crazy characters, insane characters, lunatics, whatever, they always ham it up, they always make it silly, they always do something dumb, and they're like, well, I'm just a nut job. Well, I can get away with it.
It comes up a lot in Vampire when people play Malkavians.
Yeah.
And they play the cutesy... They play it cutesier to be a class clown when you're one of the most actually fucked up clans there are.
Yeah.
It's not a cute thing. It's not a happy-go-lucky thing. Yeah, sure, there's... Since Malkavian's weakness, their clan weakness of insanity, is such a wide... ranging concept. Yes, there are some people that's quote unquote insanities are could be considered cutesy or funny, but as a character, it's not a cutesy funny thing.
Well, I mean, if you stop to do just a quick Google search, you don't even need a Google search or even go down to the fucking library. You can just look at real life examples of insanity, and what people are playing in games is nowhere near what reality is. Insanity is a disturbing fucking thing. And I don't know where they're coming from. It's to put it in a weird kind of way, it's like I was one of the more popular Malkavians when I did LARP. God, LARP. I was one of
Lightning Bolt.
I was one of the more popular Malkavians, and I'd walk into new domains because the way the club worked, you can take your character from one city and go to another city, and the master storyteller there would approve or deny your character. And I would walk in, lay down my character sheet, and he's like, please don't start a slaughter. I've got a game to run. And I would be like, you know what? Player to GM, I'll try not to kill anybody in character. Or out of character. I'll just try not to kill anybody. I got people killed, but it wasn't my hands that did it. But the concept for my character is he was a serial killer who was also super mega religious.
Uh-huh.
And about a year into playing him, I pulled the storyteller for our local area to the side. I'm like, I'm switching my preferred target for my serial killing. He's like, what? I'm like, I'm going after child regress Malkavians. Because I, as a player, don't like them. And I, as a character, would see them as a detrimental weakness to the clan. And he's like, well, yeah, that makes sense. And I was also working for the Archon locally, so when it came to other Malkavians screwing up, I got squid pro quo to go crazy on him. I would walk in, nail him to a wall, and be like, in the name of God and Cain himself, I don't care. I'm going to eat your brain.
Mm.
And I would terrify other Malkavians because I was prim, proper, very serial killer-like, a little detached when I was talking to other people, but in character, when it was go time to hurt somebody, I would just unleash, rip their damn intestines out, strangle them to death in front of their own parents, and be like, this is what seeing the universe does to you.
Mm.
It loosens the bolts. And they'd be like, shit, dude, you're unhinged. And I'm like, yeah, well, that's what he gets for wearing Kermit the Frog on his shoulder and claiming to be a Malkavian.
Yeah. A lot of things, and they even do a pretty good job of this in the core rule books for Vampire. They mention that it could be a problem and that it's not to be a cutesy thing like everyone and their grandmother playing, as you mentioned it, a child regressed Malkavian.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because the whole Malkavian mindset is that their weakness isn't actually a weakness, it's a seeing behind the veil.
Yeah, they've seen the expanse of the universe in 1 second.
And so, I mean, that's the way that they view it as. And so it's really frustrating because I'll see these other players and they'll be like talking about their Malkavians like, yeah, so my Malkavian believes that blah, 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 blah. And it's like, dude, no. Your Malkavian doesn't believe this. Your Malkavian knows this.
Yeah.
The Malkavian knows, and they're talking about their character and it's like, okay, so your Malkavian believes that God is dead and that we have built our cities upon his corpse and yada yada. No. You're describing this detached. You're not your character. This is you. You know?
True.
You need to talk about this and with emotion and with the thrust behind it. And a lot of that's the thing with the vampire storyline, with the vampire system, it's a storyteller game. And these people, and not just Malkavians do this, but a lot of other clans and other what have you do this.
Or even other game systems.
Where they detach from their characters. But it, yes, in other systems as well, but in Vampire, it's really a major part of the game is that you are your character.
Mm-hmm.
And these people are detached from it, and it doesn't drive home, because it's a game of personal horror. Let me try that again. Personal horror.
Horror.
I have a problem with that word. It always comes out as whore.
I know.
And so they look at it all as cutesy and what have you, and I'm like, you're not feeling your character. This is you, you know?
Yeah.
These things happen to you, you know? When you see, when your Malkavian has an issue or a freaking detachment, and you're just not doing it, you're not being your character. Your failure to play your character as it needs to be played based on your paper, based on your sheet and everything, is pulling everyone else out of the game.
I'm not saying that everybody who plays somebody who's a lunatic should be dangerous.
No, not at all. But I'm saying when your character has a mindset, and especially in a storyteller game like this, it's not, you don't need to LARP it, but you need to get it in your mindset that of how to react. Don't react as you're going, as you would react in this situation. React as your character would, because it's a major part of the game system itself.
It's like I had one, he didn't last very long, unfortunately, but he had major PTSD kind of thing going on. Shell shock and extremis. And every time a gunfight broke out, the character would just go hide under a table and freak mm-hmm. out. He'd go cry under a table in the fetal position. Otherwise, completely normal. It was just gunshots. Because, well, being a Malkavian, who's also a war vet, kind of fucks with you. So, you know, I took the PTSD thing and just ramped it up to 11 on the dial.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that, business savvy as fuck.
Yeah. And that's the thing. People, when there was, I'm not trying to rag on Malkavians, but it's the easiest one to pick on with the...
Because it's been so abused over the years.
Exactly. They tend to go for the extremes, what have you. They'll go for, I'm a crazy clown axe murderer thing, or I'm a child regressed. And they don't... There is a wide range of mental disorders, but they always take it wrong.
Yeah.
They always go for it wrong. Like what you're saying, Malkavians, for the most part, are normal unless they hit their trigger or what have you. And then it's like, that's not normal. That's not right. Fuck. Like Dr. Netchurch. Completely, normally seems completely fucking sane. But he has absolutely no emotions. Absolutely none. And seeing that, and if you've ever met somebody that has no emotions at all, that's creepy as shit.
It is. It's totally creepy.
That is fucking disturbing. But you have these people like, I'm ex-murderer,
Yeah, they run around and they treat madness and lunacy as if it's some sort of liberation thing where they can get away with anything because they're using the madness as a crutch to be irresponsible and at the same time not responsible for their actions.
The absolute scariest prince and sheriff that I've ever ran across in game were fucking Malkavians, and they were absolutely fucking terrifying.
When I was doing the Malkavian in LARP, I hate to admit it, but I did a Malkavian in LARP, yes.
I would love to do a LARP.
I was one of two people selected, handpicked by the Archon of the region to help him out because I was so dangerous and unpredictable. We had a breach of the Masquerade in another domain. The Archon's like, Ikanuk, I need you to come with me. They're like, okay. The other guy's a caitiff who was a super badass because all the other Gangrel beat up on him because he had Protean. Gangrel don't like that. So they beat up on the caitiff who's got Protean. They wouldn't just take him in as one of his own. So he was just violent as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And we go down to deal with the Breach of the Masquerade, and the Archon is blah, 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 blah. As Venture wanted to do, make a big, long fucking speech about it. And I call over one of the storytellers, and I'm like, nobody's looking at me right now. And the storyteller's like, okay, I'm going to pull the tendons out of this guy and make a marionette out of him, since he's staked. And I'm going to mimic everything the Prince or the Archon is doing in true time. And he's like, why? And it's like, because we're here to scare people. They can deal with the Archon, who they know is going to deal with it in a straightforward, by-the-book rules manner. But if the Archon has to send me back by myself, they're not going to want to deal with me. And so, like, we're halfway through. The Archon finally looks over because, you know, the storyteller flips him a 3x5 card to explain why I'm dancing around like an idiot in the background. The Archon turns around. He's like, "Will you stop that?" And, of course, I spin the marionette around to point at me, yelling the same thing. And everybody looks and it's like, "I work for him. He made me do this." And they're like, "Is he being a nut job or is he actually doing his job?" And the Archon's like, "Both." So we put the fear of Malkavians into them because I was on the edge of just going into serial killer mode.
I mean, so I'm not ragging on people playing Malkavians as serial killers, what have you. It's that they're not...
They turn the dial up.
They turn the dial up when it shouldn't be. They turn it down when it shouldn't be. They're not being their character. And that's one of my biggest pet peeves. If you're playing in a role-playing game and you're in a role-playing situation and you're not fucking role-playing, what the fuck? You know, dialing it up, dialing it down when it shouldn't be pulls us all out.
It does.
And if you're trying to turn down your character's, like, if your character's insane, if your character, let's pull it off of a vampire. Let's say you're playing a D&D game and you always steal the shiny. You know, you're a rogue that always steals the shiny. But now you're in the Citadel, what have you. And you've stolen from everywhere else, but now it's because you're in the Citadel and there's guards and yada yada yada. You can make the rules. We know you can. Your fucking stealth things are stupid. You could probably steal from a god, but now you're not going to because why?
Yeah.
You're changing the way you run your character just because you're why?
I think one of the best
be your character, goddammit.
For that particular Malkavian.
Take the fucking consequences for your actions. Nah.
Yeah. And like I'm trying to interject here badly. One of the things for my Malkavian is being in character is the guy who's playing the Archon, we bounced off of each other constantly in and out of game because in game he's a really important person and I'm his killer servitor guy. So we bounce a lot of stuff off each other and he knew my character's mindset. When I set out to kill someone, whether it didn't matter who it was, whether it was Malkavian or a sinner or whatever. And we're doing a game session, and I walk up to him after he commanded me to go ahead and stake a dude and take his head off. And I walk up to him, and I'm like, "That's not my preferred quarry. That was too simple of a kill. I don't like having simple kills." And right in front of the prince of that city, who was notoriously a badass, you know, Mr. I killed people for no good reason, I walk right up to the Archon, and I'm like, "Because you made me kill somebody simple, I'm going to kill you. You're now on my shit list." And I just turned around and walked away. And, of course, the guy playing the prince looks at the Archon, who's just sitting there with a smug fucking grin on his face, and he's like, "You're going to let him talk to you like that? You're going to let him threaten you in an Elysium like that?" And the Archon's like, "Relax." He's very truthful about what he wants to do, yes. And he has just declared that he wants to kill me. But that means he's also not going to let anybody else kill me. And the Archon's like, and the prince is like, "Wait, what?" And he's like, "He's worked for me for a long time. When he has his eyes on a target, he will not let anybody hurt that target. I'm safe until he comes." The prince is like, "Oh, holy shit." And that was the player figuring out my character's mindset. Because when I was in character, that was his mindset. So, like you're just saying, you know, when you're playing a character, you should be your character. And since I was my character so much when we were actually doing the LARP stuff, oh, I hate saying that word, the other player that I would play alongside with a lot of time doing the buddy system, he had figured this shit out on his own and brought it in-game.
Exactly. Be your character. God damn it, that irritates me so much. I can't even articulate it correctly, like accurately. It's one of my biggest things. It's one of my biggest things. Like, if you are a paladin, or let's take it off paladin, because people always play them as fucking...
Yeah, paladins are always lawful stupid.
Yeah. I mean, when according to the book, they shouldn't be, but everyone always looks at it that way. I don't... Anyway. Yes, I am a rules Nazi. Shut the fuck up. Heil rules!
Heil rules!
Hey, now that's a little bit leaky there.
Yeah, I know, right?
Oh,
I shouldn't have said that. I gotta check
my... Wait, who is the creator of, like, D&D?
Gary Gygax and... Dude.
Nobody remembers.
Shouldn't it be like...
I read
Gary him. Gygax.
No, I read... Fuck. Shit, piss, fuck, pussy...
We're all losing nerd points here. Don't mind us.
Oh, please. I don't know.
Oh, my God. I read his name like 3 days ago. Dave Arneson, I think it was.
We'll say that's it for now. And then...
Oh, my God. I would not pass a trivia quest right now.
You're not paying attention to this conversation. Google it.
Not very much.
Okay.
Let's say you're playing a fucking cleric, and you refuse to heal, you know, thieves. Just thieves. If they've stolen anything and haven't made reparations, you refuse to fucking heal thieves, and a new, you know, one of the characters died in the last session, and they come back as a thief, why on earth would your character heal them? You've made it an integral part of your fucking characters. Yes, it's gonna fuck with the group some, but there's no reason why all of a sudden you should be, meh.
And that's another...
I'm gonna heal you. No, don't heal that person if they fucking steal.
Yeah, that's another player taboo at the table, is when somebody makes a character who specifically, in some way, shape, or form, is designed so that they can outwork with one or more player characters in the group. Like you were just saying, if it's a cleric who does not heal thieves, and you get game session number one, you got your standard party four, fighter, mage, thief, cleric, and the cleric's like, I don't heal thieves. Well, he's just made himself non-integral to the rest of the group, because he's built his character in some way that cannot work with the rest of the group. And for the group to actually make it to the end objectives in whatever story or whatever setting, the group is going to need to be a little more willy-nilly on their own personal
rules. Well, no, I understand that, but that's why I was saying, I put it like the way I did, where, you know, you guys are an established group, this has been an established thing that you've always done.
I got the first name right.
What's his name?
Dave Arneson.
Dave Arneson.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you said?
We'll see on the recording.
No, I said Dave something. It was I was close.
Okay. Well, I'm saying, like, if you've made that an established part of your character and you guys have been playing for a fucking year and now all of a sudden the sorcerer dies and says, you know what? I'm going to be a thief. I'm going to play a rogue. And they're, you know, a sneaky, you know, purse-cutty fucking rogue. And now, you know, this has been an established thing for the cleric that their god hates thieves and won't work with them. Who's in the wrong there?
Yeah.
I think to heal the thief that refuses to make concessions or make reparations for it. Not reparations, that's not the right word.
You're black and you go right to reparations, what the fuck?
Fuck you, Mexi bastard.
I didn't say it.
You know what I'm saying? There's no reason why that character should be working with that new character. At that point, you have to come up, as a DM, you would have to come up with something to work around that. What are you doing?
I don't know, but it does actually kind of bring me to another taboo at the table that I, as both a player and a GM, I really hate. And that's people who take a character concept, let's say if we're going with D&D or Vampire the Masquerade or Rift or whatever, and they look at the class of their character and they're like, well, I'm going to be playing a monk. But they decide, you know, their monk is more of a tavern brawler, or their monk is more of a circus acrobat type, or even a court jester, even though they got horrible social skills for doing that. But they break away from that class and make something completely new and unique, and you're just using that class and the class skills as a template, and then everybody else rags on them for it. I don't see any point in doing that. If somebody wants to make a bard whose bardic performance is oration, they're really good at giving speeches, getting a crowd riled up. They're like, orcs will be attacking. Will we let them take our farms? Will we let them take our children? And they get this rousing speech. They're not playing instruments. That's really cool. So why should everybody else rag on it? If somebody makes a monk who's actually a court jester who's just really skilled in beating the shit out of people, why not let them do that? They're being creative and taking a template and moving it in a more creative direction. I don't see why other people should rag on them for going in a deviant direction with what's already been established.
I've got no problem with that unless they make the mistake of specializing themselves into uselessness.
Well, yeah.
When you specialize yourself into uselessness, like, I can only use pool cues as a fucking weapon. Everything else is considered an improvised weapon, but there are no fucking pool cues.
Well, yeah, there's that, but I mean...
Now you're a useless fucking character dragging everyone else down.
If you take the monk archetype and you move that into like Barroom Brawler, the person's probably more likely a bouncer or a cooler.
Yeah, no.
Then I'm going to whittle people with pool stick. But yeah, if they just decide, my entire shtick is throwing pool balls at people. Yeah, it's...
That's what I'm saying. If you somehow manage to make yourself useless in 99% of all situations, what's going to happen is either you're going to be useless to the group and drag everyone down, or you're going to have to force the DM to change all of the encounters into a way that it's everyone's useful. Therefore, it's always... All the fights are going to take place in a fucking pool hall.
Yeah, one of the best ridiculous. I saw for concepts was a guy who made a dwarven rogue. But instead of being your stereotypical sneak, backstabby, he was a locksmith.
Yeah.
He was an established locksmith who worked in town. And they were like, well, what about sneaking and stuff? And he's like, dude, I have to sometimes go into the royal castle where people like me shouldn't be seen. While the royal mucky mucks and stuff are walking around, I should be not seen as much as possible because they consider that... servant work, and they don't want servants to be seen, so that's why I'm good at sneaking and staying out of sight. Well, then they're like, well, why are you good at backstabbing? And it's because, well, sometimes they see me, and when they get done yelling at me and docking my pay and making fun of me, I have to go work my aggressions out over to the fighters training camp. So he'd go over and moonlight over at the fighters guild and just stab the shit out of dummies. Because he's working out his dwarven aggression so he doesn't beat the shit out of some royal and get in further trouble. So he had, like, explanations for all of his rogue abilities, but he was an established, law-abiding, lawful, neutral lockpick. He was just a guy who went around town changing locks on houses and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still the same, you know, template, the same character class, but he was just off on a whole nother deviant tangent with it. Which... I see works, and I don't see why other people would have to go, no, this is what it says in the book. You have to be skulking in the shadows and wearing a face mask and dealing with the Thieves Guild constantly. It's one of my taboos, personally, as a GM and a player, to see people get ragged on for going outside the norm.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, if they decide to start using pool sticks as their only form of weapon.
Like I said, it's...
Then they kind of deserve a little bit of anger.
Hey... Mexi,
yeah,
you got anything?
No, he's been playing on
something, and I was waiting for you to finish.
Oh, well, come on, jump in, man.
I don't want more juice of shame. That's already going to be next week's docket.
I know. I'm not looking forward to it.
I know. Well, you're in control of what the juice of shame is now, since someone seems to like overly sour shit.
Yep.
Which shit were we talking about?
Well, I'm going to change it around, because apparently you like concentrated lemon juice.
I love it.
See?
I mean, I hate it. It's so gross. How'd you guys find out about that?
You said it.
When did I say that?
We were talking about what the juice of shame was, and yeah. Said it, or Goblin said that I had some, and you're like, ooh, I love that shit.
I don't remember that. That wasn't tonight.
No,
because no, tonight that was you, weeks ago.
No, this was months ago, dude.
Months ago now?
This was months.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So, but what I've got is something that bugs me is super indecisive players. When I'm sitting at a table with someone who, they like all the, ooh, look, I'm in the group. Then the moment they get to do something, they have no idea what the fuck to do. They went just into this elaborate thing of why they're the most special fucking awesome thing ever.
Are you making fun of Nash?
No.
Okay.
Why the fuck would I do that? Are you making fun of Catherine? I don't want to get stabbed.
Are you making fun of Catherine Can?
No.
Are you making fun of me?
No.
Okay, good.
I'm making fun of someone who played MX. Played MX and then hopped in on someone else's games a couple times, where they do all of this and they make it sound cool, or it's something they just happen to be into that day or that hour, just saw it on Facebook. So they do this and they go through the thing, make the character, and then they get to make choices and they have no idea what the fuck they're gonna do. I'm gonna be a warrior of the nighttime hoo-ha thingamajig. Oh no, it's nighttime, what do I do? I totally have, like, all these buffs, but I don't know. We're not fighting anything right now. I'm gonna wait until we're doing something. It's like your character's doing nothing. And then when they're in battle, I'm gonna do this one thing over and over and over again. They're not even good at it. Their character has no proficiencies or anything. That's what kills me.
Yeah.
People who try and just, look at me, look at me, look at me. Oh, I can't. I'm not I can't do anything, even though they have all the options in the world.
So kind of like net deckers.
Oh yeah, net deckers. They're, now, I've net decked.
No. But I'm saying the people that only net deck, they've never built a deck. I'm referencing Magic the Gathering. People that play Magic the Gathering, but they just get their decks from online, their deck lists, and they don't really know how to
pilot.
Improvise. They don't really know how to pilot the thing that they built. And so unless things line up perfectly, they're just and not doing anything. And I understand what you're saying when it comes to like a game where they will go online, they will pull up a build for a Warrior of the Night, as you were saying, and they don't really feel their character. They don't feel what's going on. They don't know how to improvise. They don't know how to do anything with the character. And so when it's their fucking turn and that thing's not going on, they don't know how to do shit because they don't feel the fucking character. They don't know the character's backstory. They just have a bunch of numbers on a fucking sheet, and that's all the character is to them.
And a cool drawing.
Ooh, maybe they have a cool drawing.
Ooh, a cool drawing?
Well, to them, it's cool.
Sign me the fuck up. No,
because the one who did that was cloned.
I'm sensing some anger here, dude.
It really annoyed me. The fuck out of me. Or it's also something I had to deal with someone else. But clone's the only one with a nickname, so.
Okay.
Clone's the only one I can mention.
Yeah. Okay.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it's something that bothers me because you guys know, and I know our listeners are probably tired of me. Ooh, I'm special.
Our special Mexican snowflake.
Oh, damn, Skippy, the specialist.
He's a brown snowflake. Don't eat the brown snow.
But he liked eating his salad toss. Shut up. Who are you to judge him? Remember, he loves them dick pics.
I don't.
Do me a favor.
You son of a bitch. I'm the admin. I'm going to have to see them first.
2-for-1 special.
Not if I never see them.
Oh, you'll see them. If I have to see them, you will see them. Even if I.
What do you mean he should see them?
Even if I have to print the dick pics out and put them under your pillow, you will see them.
If you do that, he'll start putting them underneath his mattress. You're like, this one? This one's for February's.
He's going to wait for the dick fairy to deliver him a couple of quarters.
Oh, come on. We know Narciss over here couldn't get two bits for his.
You know what? It works for me. That's all that I care about. Things that irritate.
Oh, there's always things that irritate gamers and taboos at tables. Well, rules, lawyers, divas.
Oh, wait. No, here's another one. Again, this is along that same line of someone who net decks their character. People who literally play an already famous character. Not like a clone, or they thought of it and they'd never heard of it. I mean someone who literally is like, oh, I totally read this story.
Oh, you mean like Drizzt? All the Drizzt players?
But there's two kinds of Drizzt players. There's intentional and unintentional. There's the new people to the game that's like, oh, this is an original idea. And to them it is.
I forgive Arnold for that. I forgive him. Because that was the only inspiration he had when he's made his character. It's the only reason I give him for that, because he was brand new to the whole thing, brand new to role-playing, never owned a set of dice before that, fresh, new, first character sheet he ever had made. I forgive him for that, because it's the only inspiration he had. And players will always take inspiration from things that they like, of course. Well, like, for me, video games. For you, magic. For you, dick pics.
No, it's the other way around.
I know. People will always take inspiration from things they like. However, if somebody has played more than one game session in any medium, and I've seen it on MMOs as well, is some fucking blueberry running around with a misspelling of Drizzt over his head, makes me stab happy.
No. I'm talking about those people who go around like giants in the playground and shit like that, and look at people's. You know, it's not like, oh, here's some suggestions for a cool build. It's really like, yeah, this is my build, and this is the way I'm running my character, and it's really fun. And they literally just rip that off. Because I found someone who did that. I'm no longer talking to that person.
We had a GM who also did something similar to that. Like, not quite Drizzt level of stupidity, but it was still a level of stupidity that was fucked up. We were doing a Rifts game. God almighty, holy shit, that was a long time ago. Oh my god, I just realized. I'm pulling up a story
from the 90s or almost 20 years ago.
Watch this. He's remembering gaming. Everyone else had mullets.
Wait, hold on.
Yes, one of the guys actually did have a
perm. Wait, hold on. How many of them had a perm?
He did not have enough hair. The other player did not have enough hair for a perm. This was actually back when I still had a full head of hair.
Holy God.
This is when I had a hairline, right?
Dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. We were playing games back in Sepia, you know, 16-bit colors. Mm-hmm. But during our Rifts game, the GM cloned player characters.
Okay.
But that is an even bigger no-no in my book than cloning Antonio Starkova. Okay. I'll send you a picture of that later on, the wizard who made Tony Stark armor. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take inspiration from the superhero thing, like we were doing in one game, making the fucking Avengers, everybody was having fun with it. The GM was having fun with it. They're like, sorcerer, make more shit. It was a fun game, and nobody was really that highly invested in anyway. We were having fun. But the one that really stands out for me is I was playing a Grackletooth who was about 50% Southern Comfort and 50% Big Rig.
Okay.
Right? He's a Grackletooth munching on a cigar, lived down by the Rio Grande. His hobbies included shooting vampires with a water cannon because he's on the safe side of the Rio Grande. So he just sit on his side in a lawn chair, drink some Southern Comfort, light a cigar, and shoot him with a high-pressure hose. Just to keep all them damn vampires off his property. Man, he was always, you know, I reckon we can do something about that. His big key word, though, reckon.
Reckon?
Reckon. We're going to go over there and we're going to deal with them CS boys, I reckon, and maybe get some drinks.
And then he's going to be wrecking that chicken boost on. And then
I might be wrecking things later on, if you know what I mean. Well, I had him.
He carried a drill for the bathroom.
Yeah, he carried a drill for the bathroom. I had him and one of the other people had a Samus pilot who was piloting a Sidewinder. So he was not Coalition States pilot. And he had a really awesome concept for his character, too. Is he was basically kind of like, before it even became a theater thing, he was Too Fast, Too Furious with a flying suit of power armor.
Okay.
Which somehow in power armor, drifting is even cooler, I guess. I don't know, but...
Was he three-dimensional drifting?
He was three-dimensional drifting. Yeah. So we had this crazy-ass wacky pilot in his power armor and a Grackletooth who just moseyed everywhere he went. Even in massive combat, the chips are on the table. Oh my god, we're about to die. And he's just moseying along. Well, if we win, we win. If we don't, whatever. Just don't hit my liquor. Please don't hit my liquor. We get to another point in the Risk campaign. We bounce across a ley line. Our characters wind up in Japan. Of all places. We steal a fucking nuclear boat. It's the GM who was running it. And two of the crew members on the boat who came with us were Japanese defectors because they wanted to leave the Empire because fucking reasons. One of them was a Samus pilot who was flying around in the Japanese Samus armor, who was also an ace pilot. And then there was a griot, big reptile thing, whose name was Tennessee, who had a penchant for drinking Old Crow. And I'm just like, wait a minute, you're cloning player characters with your NPCs.
Mm-hmm. And running them into players, running them into the PCs in the same fucking...
Yeah.
Like, it's not like you're cloning our old characters from last game, because that's kind of a funny throwback.
That's always a throwback thing.
But we're literally... That would be annoying as
our
shit.
Our characters were literally looking at the Japanese clone symbiote copies of ourselves.
That would be annoying as shit.
Yeah.
Because now you're no longer... Because
I don't see many GMs pull that one, but that time pissed me off.
We make fun of the special snowflakes and whatnot, but everyone's character is a special... You know, that's your avatar in this fucking game, and now having it thrown in your face that you're just a number... You're just a... Fucking
collection of numbers.
Yeah, just another one of many. That kind of also takes you out of the fucking game, and it's no longer fun.
Well, when you make a character, you're making it's an extension of you in a way. It is your power fulfillment, your wish fulfillment, your creativity. It's something you're building, and for a GM to just usurp that, that's not cool, not bueno. Because it does take you out of it. It really does. From personal experience, I can tell you that.
Well, for wanting to end on a high note, things we like that players or GMs do. Just quick little things. For me...
Get out of my house.
I pay rent. Fuck off.
I live in that corner.
Pay me rent, bitch. But no.
Okay, so high note. Things GMs or players do that you like.
Something I like we have in game where we always reference back to our old characters, and sometimes we pay homage to them, right? Like, Nedja's character was the sister of Shadwell. That was cool. That was cool. Fun. You know, Kazarkan is currently playing the son of his character that died because someone couldn't leave their fucking sword or make the goddamn check.
I blame you.
I thought you were being controlled
actually,
by the death guy.
I think one of the best things that I like... Did I just double like?
I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I know, it's late. One of the things that bring me the most at the game table to going, holy shit, this is actually going to be a phenomenal game, is we had a player, he was only there a short time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 5 game sessions total.
Yeah.
But he was always in character. Except for break time. He had the voice down, his character sheet, I swear, he just set it off to the side, but he memorized all the numbers. So if you wanted to check the pips, you'd be like, okay, he's actually called a 6 and it's on the character sheet. You could trust him. He wasn't going to be all super cheaty.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he played his character just made you want to ramp it up a little bit more.
Like the role-playing or the battle?
The role-playing.
Yeah.
The not numbers, just the role-playing
portion. You wanted to step to his level.
He did bring a whole new level to the game, and he just jacked the bar up a little bit more higher than the rest of us. And I was like, fuck, this guy's got his game on. I got to come back with my game face on, because this dude is actually legit.
Throw on your war paint, pull out your mascara.
You throw out my mascara, draw lines on my face, and be like, I'm playing my vampire now, dude. That's a high note for me. Is players who actually show up and they are on the ball, ready to play and have fun, and still raise the bar just a little bit higher than the rest.
Mm. What about you, Narnar?
Narnar, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a few episodes. We've got to call you Narnar.
I would have to say new players. Well, it's not necessarily relegated to new players, but it's most common with new players. When somebody's character clicks, when they feel their character, or when the numbers start being more than just numbers on a paper.
Mm.
And another variation of that is when a person's been trying to do something, you know, in game, or they've been, like, you know, waiting for this spell or get these components so they can do this really cool thing, and they get to do their really cool thing. Because as you said, gaming is a form of escapism and wish fulfillment and, you know, what have you, and to being able to be that more than and have that come to fruition, that's awesome. Like when the person finally gets access to Fireball, because everyone fucking loves Fireball, or when the person fucking finally gets the components they need to build their super fucking computer that we need, that's one of the steps to being able to meet the end goal of the game, what have you, that seeing that, not their kids on Christmas eyes light up thing, but you know that
yeah.
Fuck yeah moment.
The fuck yeah
when
moment.
Your IKEA gun finally fires and doesn't blow up in your face. That's a time for magic.
That is a really awesome moment. Is just when everything just, it's the fuck yeah moment.
The fuck yeah moment. It's all too rare nowadays. True. That is a good moment. And like I said, there are players who raise the bar. There's fuck yeah moments. What about you? You brought the subject up, motherfucker.
Yeah, the biggest thing for me is when a group clicks, when we know what we do, when we play our roles. Not just the character as, like, an embodiment of something, but when we know in a fight or in a scenario who's the face, who's the fist, who's, you know, the backbone of the group. When everyone can cohesively progress the story and not spend an entire game session, which have been progressively getting shorter, arguing about who gets to fucking let the god sleep on their couch.
Wait, have we had let a god sleep on our couch?
Yes, in Vampire, remember? There was a nice session-long argument about where the god got to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, where the god got to sleep. She was going to be so much fun if I let her loose on the world.
Yeah. Like, when we don't do that is awesome. When it shows up like, alright, we've got our fucking ranger, you know, firing in bolts. We've got our bard fucking doing their fucking performance. We've got our fighter going in for super extra, mega burn all my points to do 200 points of damage as long
as
I'm
above a
3. Yeah,
when you got two players who are bro-fisting off of one another and they're playing a really tight game, it's awesome. And when the whole crew does it,
Oh, it's so
it's good. Out of the park.
Fastball special moments.
Oh, better than fastball special. It's like Power Rangers pulling off their, you know, all our weapons connect together into a super weapon, that kind of shit.
Oh, yeah, this person bashes the bad guy over to that side because he knows that dude is always going to be over on that side of him. So he bashes him over there, and then that person uppercuts him over to that guy, and then, oh, that's perfectly in line with the archer's next volley, so that person gets pinned down. Yeah.
Definitely, that's an awesome thing when just everyone clicks. It's not you find your niche and you play your role because someone in the group says so, otherwise your character dies until you play your fucking role. No, it's when everyone organically comes together, as diverse a class group as you can get in 4, 6, 8, 14 players.
I actually find it interesting how, in MMOs especially, when you go into a boss fight or into a larger fight, people are more cohesive about pulling in tandem maneuvers on random disposable NPC things than they are with dice and paper in their hands. Mm-hmm. When dice and paper are in people's hands, they're like, well, I run over and I attack this guy, and then player two is like, I run over and attack that guy. Player three does the same thing, and they all just scatter across mm-hmm. the battlefield, all fighting their own individual battles in a massive battle. And then when I look at an MMO, I see like the ranger is pulling like a motherfucker, the cleric is chain healing, the fighter is tanking like a motherfucker, you got the shaman over there munching on their own arm doing cannibal stuff to keep the cleric's mana up, and you're just like, everybody's working together.
Yeah.
Why don't they do this when they're at the table? Fights would be so much better, and they'd be more harrowing for the DM if this was the way it was done.
Oh my god, is that something we're going to have to do?
What, work together? If you guys work together, I might, like, I don't know.
Run another game?
My brain will fall out if you guys don't start working together. Okay, so that's our... We're digressing now a lot. So that's our episode on GMs and players doing taboo shit. And if you have any of these signatures in your gameplay, you might want to check that and try not to be that dick.
But if it's in your gaming group and it's not you, don't be a dick and call them out in front of everybody. Pull aside, send a text, write a note, run it by the GM. Don't be a dick. But if you notice it in your own, think about, you know, taking steps to not.
Take it out of game.
Yeah. But that is all for us tonight. Let's send them off with a good one, guys.
He was going to say something.
No, I was just going to make a comment.
Send him off with a good one. All right. And let slip the frogs of war.
Praise Keck.
Yeah, about that.
Chatelet, motherfucker.
Chatelet. Whoa.